Welcome to Oncology Data Advisor, where we explore the latest advances in cancer research and patient care. Thanks for listening to this episode. Be sure to visit oncdata.com for more content, including expert perspectives from leading oncology thought leaders, FDA approvals, patient advocacy, and much more. And don't forget to subscribe to Oncology Data Advisor on social media to stay up to date on the latest videos, podcasts, and more.
Well, thank you for joining us here at Oncology Data Advisor. My name is Joe Kalis. I'm an ambulatory oncology pharmacist with UC Health in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Wanted to hop on a call today so that I can introduce one of our newest board members for Oncology Data Advisor, have a conversation with him, let him tell us a little bit about what he does, kind of some of the unique perspectives he's got on oncology and supportive care, especially coming from a different specialty. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce the viewers to Dr. Joseph Oropeza.
Thanks, Joe, for the introduction. Like Joe said, my name is Joe Oropeza. I'm an emergency medicine pharmacist here at UC Health Memorial Central Hospital. Traditionally, I was trained in critical care and am board certified in critical care pharmacy, but have over the past couple of years kind of moved my career and passions more towards emergency medicine. And I'm super happy to be involved with this and learn more about the oncology realm from you guys. So thank you for having me.
Oh, we're very excited to have you because we've got the fellows, the pharmacists, quite a variety of people, but oncology can really touch so many disciplines and so many health specialties. So before we kind of dig into that and how your role in the emergency department plays to it, I was hoping you could spend a couple minutes and tell us, well, what got you interested into critical care and emergency medicine pharmacy?
Sure. You know, that's a tough question. I feel it's somewhat akin to what's your favorite food or song? There's a lot of things that really interested me in originally in critical care. I think particularly because I am somewhat impatient and like to see the instant gratification. So if we have somebody who is critically ill that needs immediate treatment, a lot of those treatments, you're going to see the effect of that treatment within seconds of starting it. And that allows us to kind of titrate and kind of not to nerd out too much on all the drips over here, but it gives you gives me a sense of gratification to see sort of that instant fix with a lot of those very, very critically ill patients. And you know, why emergency medicine, which is, again, certainly an interesting question because I did start my career in critical care, and they can seem at times very on polar opposite ends of that career stick. However, through my residency training, I had many experiences in the emergency department, both during my PGY1 and PGY2 years. I would say that throughout those experiences, I found myself attracted to, I'll call it the high-paced, organized chaos that is the emergency department. Now, as you know, Joe, I'm a very high-energy person. I like to be moving around most of my day, and I think that the ED provides pharmacists, at least in my opinion, with a unique practice environment. Since we are often collaborating with the medical team at the bedside, you know, and to rope in the critical care component, you know, we do get to see a lot of critically ill patients that come through the emergency department. So when I had the chance to mix my passion for critical care with everything else that is the ED, I found myself very interested in kind of moving my career towards emergency medicine pharmacy and have kind of been there ever since.
Well, thank you. And for the viewers out there, Joe and I are colleagues at the same institution, pretty good friends outside of work. So if there seems an extra air of familiarity, that's going to be the reason behind it. But it's interesting that you bring up the drips, because I know we've had offline conversations where you joke about being able to fix everything with the drip and I joke about being able to fix everything with a monoclonal antibody or a mAb. But for any viewers out there who might be unfamiliar or just need a refresher on some of the pharmacy pathways. So PGY1 is postgraduate year one after you earn your doctor of pharmacy, kind of often focuses more on internal medicine, general pharmacotherapy. And then if the individual wishes to specialize in something, so oncology for me, critical care and emergency medicine for Joe, you can choose to do a second year. So he and I have each completed those board trainings in different avenues, different specialties. But yeah, I like to be able to talk to my patients. Joe likes to be able to put them on drips and sedate them. So you've got both ends of the spectrum covered here. But I think really what makes Joe, Dr. Oropeza, if we want to be formal, such an asset to the Oncology Data Advisor Board is a lot of the oncologic emergencies out there. You know, we think of things like febrile neutropenia, hypercalcemia of malignancy. As we get into the T cell and redirection therapies like CAR T cells and bispecific antibodies, there could be things like cytokine release syndrome or others as these agents are given more in the outpatient setting. And Joe and his colleagues in the emergency department are going to be that first line of defense. You know, they might call the clinic first and then get directed there. But I kind of see it as we're all still partners. Healthcare is still a team sport. And we really need to have everybody be on the same page. So from the emergency medicine standpoint, you know, let's say a patient walks in, you know, they're in the oncology clinic, they're being treated on active chemotherapy, and they've got a fever. So can you walk us through some of that emergency department thought process for like how you would work up a patient with febrile neutropenia, and then what information from an oncologist might be most helpful for you?
Yeah, of course. Like you said, this would be qualify for more one of what I would call three categories or three ways that we kind of intersect with oncology as more of like a cancer-related emergency. The biggest thing with neutropenic fever that we're going to be concerned about is making sure that we're providing adequate coverage right on the front end. So, things that I'm looking for right on the front end is, are they actually febrile, or, is this like a subjective fever that they're coming in with? Do we have recent blood counts, or how quick can we get those blood counts to determine if they are neutropenic at this point? What was their last chemotherapy regimen? Just because, depending, and you can talk more in detail about these than I can, but they're depending on which of their chemo regimen that they're on, that could potentially be associated with a potentially greater risk of developing neutropenic fever as compared to other regimens. And so that can help us determine, oh, if they're on a high risk regimen, maybe we just empirically start treatment prior to this, given that the temporal aspect of their expected nadir, their clinical presentation with us right now. Maybe we just start it prior to getting the counts just to make sure that we're covering. Because what we do know when people do come in, with folks without cancer who come in with septic shock, we know that every hour of delay of appropriate antibiotic therapy can increase mortality by about 7.2% up to the first 6 hours. So how much more is that with somebody who has a disease state as complicated as cancer? And so there is a sense of true medical emergency to make sure that we're providing adequate care for these folks. And it can get very complicated because we also don't want to overtreat them because they're also at risk for treatment-related side effects associated with antibiotics. And so we have to be very diligent in making sure we're evaluating them appropriately and starting them on appropriate therapy.
You brought up some good points about okay, what regimen are they on? And mentioning the nadir, it's like the cell counts being at their lowest point. So would it be a helpful piece of information for listeners to, you know, they're say they're calling over a report to the emergency department, you know, I've got Mrs. Smith, they're on whatever the regimen is. So would it be helpful then for the emergency department to know like when the last treatment was to assess some of that nadir information and then the risk of febrile neutropenia?
Yeah, I think I think it definitely would be. It's hard to, from my perspective, it's hard for me to speak for all of emergency medicine, particularly because I'm just one small little facet of it. But throughout my relatively short career, I have noticed one thing that is challenging, particularly with this population. And that is the documentation component. A lot of times when these folks come in, we have very little information, and sometimes we don't even have access to the records. We're very fortunate here at Memorial Central that our primary cancer clinic in town is attached to our hospital. So, we do share medical records with you guys, so we're very fortunate from that aspect. But often, as you probably know, in the ED, we're often making this treatment decisions on very, very little information. And as new information comes in, those treatment decisions can change literally moment to moment. And so, if the more information we can have on the front end, whether it's from a peer-to-peer conversation or if, it's in the medical records, the more information we can have on the front end, where is their cancer? What type of treatment are they on? Is it immunologic? Is it chemotherapy, et cetera? And when was their last doses given? Was it today? Maybe I wouldn't expect them to be as neutropenic if they're coming directly from the infusion clinic versus, oh, it's been about, 7 to 10 days since their chemotherapy and now they're coming in. And so a lot of that information really helps build that acute care sort of clinical picture. So that certainly would be helpful, I think.
Yeah, the more information you can get, especially if they've been treated at a different health system or they're coming, we've got a number of patients here that live several hours away from the hospital, and maybe they've received local care at a more critical access or more rural treatment facility. Any records you can get, any information's helpful. And I think too, like some chemotherapies and cancer treatment drugs have a risk of tumor fever or even drug-induced fever as a side effect. And I think of gemcitabine as one, where I'll tell patients, if you spike a fever within 12 hours of getting your dose, it's most likely from the drug. However, we still need to work it up and make sure that that is in fact the case. And I like that you brought up some of the points about, time directly affecting mortality, especially with the risk of infection. And that brings to mind another oncologic emergency, hypercalcemia malignancy. Now, I remember giving talks on this particular condition and the statistic of, if a patient is hypercalcemic and it's due to their cancer, there's a 50% chance of mortality within 30 days. So it's relying more on just the underlying malignancy being progressive. And I think that just underscores the need for everybody to remain collaborative with, just because you're in emergency medicine, just because somebody else is oncology, again, we're all still on that same team. And I think
Absolutely.
too, again, you brought up the great point of the immunologic therapies kind of being more the cutting edge right now. So let's say hypothetical patient comes into the emergency department, they were on a checkpoint inhibitor. How does that affect some of the differential workup? I mean, I imagine it would still be helpful to have as much information as you can, but I think about the immune checkpoint inhibitors and even like some of the T cell agents now being a little bit perhaps more vague if a patient just presents at the ED.
Absolutely. I don't think you can def I don't think you can under understate that. It can be very hard. It's particularly with the new T cell therapies. A lot of times those patients can present with symptoms that mimic septic shock. And the treatment is very different for septic shock than it is for some of the T cell related toxicity. And in one case, we're giving essentially a mild immunosuppressant, where the other, we want to try to bolster that immune response as much as we can and give them, heavy antibiotics and pressures and stuff. And so, it can be very, very difficult. And so, again, being able to understand what their disease, where they're at in their disease process, where they're at in their treatment really helps guide the differential in my understanding. Now, I don't do too much of the differential diagnosis side of things, but as far as deciding on what treatments, what doses, what how to approach their care, I work very closely with those providers to collaborate on making those decisions. And so having that information up front can be helpful, because then we're not just thinking, oh, this is your generic sepsis alert that comes in. We're thinking, okay, this is a sepsis alert in a cancer patient. Is this treatment related? Is this directly related to their cancer? It expands that initial clinical approach. I hate to this is probably a poor word, but I hate to algorithmize patient care, because I think each patient needs to be looked at exactly as they are, and I think that is particularly true with our oncology population. And so I would say that it does add a degree of complexity when we have folks that come in who are on particularly the immunologic agents, because they can present with multiple, particularly like the itises, right? That can present
Absolutely.
as a whole host of different agents. They could, depending on where the itis is, whether it's in their liver, their GI tract, that's all a different, both a different diagnosis track and a different management track. But if we knew that they were on an immune point, then that could change, that could quickly change how we're thinking about and how we're approaching the management for that
Yeah.
patient.
Like you mentioned earlier, shifting the plan within minutes of getting new information. Analogy that popped into my head. I remember growing up, and even still, when I have spare time now, playing a PC-based strategy game, Age of Empires. And as you again, for anybody in the audience who's not familiar, you start off with a small village, but the rest of the map is black, and you have to go explore to see what else is out there. And I'm seeing a lot of parallels with the emergency department, where just a patient comes in, like all you know is what's right in front of you, unless there's information that's come in from an outside source. Because I think you really hit the nail on the head. Like you could be giving somebody pressors and antibiotics, or if you knew that they'd been on one of the PD-1 checkpoint inhibitors, we could be looking at high-dose steroids. Or if they're on CAR T cell, maybe we're looking at tocilizumab. So it's a very drastic, I think, divide in terms of treating what might present as a very similar symptom.
Absolutely.
Think with those things said, we've covered a fair bit of ground in terms of how you started in pharmacy to now working in the emergency department and seeing cancer patients. If there was any one thing you would like to leave our audience, and again, we've got physicians in training, we've got full-fledged providers, wide variety of people out there, but if there's any one thing you would like them to know about the emergency department as it relates to cancer care, what might that be?
Yeah, that is a tough question. Again, I'm not sure I'm qualified to speak on behalf of all of emergency care here. But we've talked a lot about the information aspect of things. That is super important. Again, I can't overstate that. I think if I had to choose anything else, maybe the importance of reaching, if you're going to be sending somebody into the ED, maybe reaching in and having those peer-to-peer conversations on the front end, as opposed to having an ambiguous patient just show up and say, like, oh, I was told to come here. Providing it, maybe taking those extra steps, because a lot of times emergency medicine is very broad. I hate to use the word general, but whereas oncology is very specific. And so
That's a great
maybe
point.
if a patient comes in and they're on some new study drug, chances are even me as the medication expert hasn't heard of that drug yet. So if they are on, and particularly if they're on like an experimental treatment, a little bit of taking the extra time to provide some, very brief basic education during that handoff could potentially change the course of care for that patient and the course of their outcomes. I think that would be maybe one thing that I would like to experience more often.
Okay. Well, Dr. Oropeza, sir, thank you for your time and joining us on the interview here for the board. Look forward to many happy years working together in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you,
All
Gary.
right.
Appreciate
Yep.
you.
Yeah, thank you.